Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Time is 1:31. February 16, 2018. With me today is Senator. Yeah, 6, not the 16th. It's a trick question. Senator Egan, Senator McKinnon, and myself, Stedman, so we got a quorum. And we'll have Senator Egan stand by and pay attention to the date so the chairman stays at least within a week of the meeting. Okay. Today we're going to have the beginning of several presentations from DOT. We're going to kind of overview the STIP projects around the state, the transportation projects, including airports, and just kind of get a feel for where we're at on a statewide perspective. So it'll take a couple of or several meetings. We're going to break it down by regions, and then we'll have some discussions at the committee level to see where we want to go from there. We may want to have a discussion on maintenance issues or some other things coming up. And what we're going to try to do here is augment the work of the Finance Committee, so the Finance Committee then will have a kind of a base so they don't have to hopefully do some of this stuff, and they can jump right into some of the capital budget conversations, which isn't really the preview of this committee. So with that, today we'll hear from the Deputy Commissioner, John Binder, regarding the statewide aviation update, and specifically the AIP, which is the Airport Improvement Program, and the APEB, the Airport Project Evaluation Board, I guess is the subject today. And with that, Mr. Binder, if you could put yourself on the record and who you represent, and we'll just roll through your presentation.
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is John Binder. I'm a Deputy Commissioner with Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And as you alluded to here today, the focus of my presentation will be on the Airport Project Evaluation Board, often referred to as the APEB, as well as some of the aviation projects going on across the state here over the current year, 2017 and 2018 as well. I will give a little bit of budget information over FY17 there as well, because it rolls into how a lot of these projects were funded and how they will continue to be going forward. Do you like to start off with highlighting one of our individuals here? This is Sergeant Darcy Perry, Police and Fire Sergeant with Anchorage Police and Fire. Born and raised in Anchorage, been serving with DOT now for a little over 12 years. Tremendous asset to the airport and to the state. One of our lead instructors organized first ever firefighting conference there in Alaska as well that had several international participants. And the big thing I want to highlight here is this last year she was project manager for an aircraft rescue and firefighting training video series, or a series of five videos, different aircraft that we use across the state that were actually rapidly picked up and are used across the nation now as well for training police and fire individuals. And for that, we were awarded the National Innovation Award from National Association of State Aviation Officials as well, one of three national awards available each year. You're well aware of DOT's mission of keeping Alaska moving through service and infrastructure. We do break down the airport system into our internationals and our rural system, with the internationals being really focused on the economic generator piece. So their specific mission is keeping Alaska flying and thriving. Our rural system, the remaining 240 airports, though, I really deal primarily with access and providing the critical needs and services to rural Alaska, so we focus on sustaining and improving the quality of life throughout Alaska. As a deputy commissioner, I do oversee both systems there, international system and the rural system. And just a reminder, the international system, AIAS, was stood up many years ago by the legislature. As an enterprise system, they are required to be self-sustaining, so they do not accept any dollar or state funds, and no revenues from the system flow to the state as well. And I'll give a little bit more detail on how those budgetings have worked over the last couple years. In FY17 system, total operating costs were about $148 million. Revenue brought in was a little over $151 million. Again, this slide in front of you is strictly the operating piece. As you see, we did bring in a little bit more than our cost. We do develop our rate and fee structure each year based on our anticipated costs, and any revenue in excess of what is needed rolls into the rate and fee structure for the following year, so the carriers see that benefit of that. And if for some reason we were to come up a little short each year, then the carriers who have signed on with the operating agreement to make up that difference as well to keep the system whole year by year.
Could you touch on the rate adjustments that I think have been made at some of the airports? Didn't we adjust some of the leases while we're working on that? Could you?
Mr. Chairman, we sure did. That is in the rural system that we've made some rate adjustments this year, effective July 1st. Typically, our rural system, through regulation, we set up about a five-year rate structure, generally increasing about 10% per year out there because the rates are so low compared to fair market value. 2015 was the end of the last cycle. 16, we spent most of the year doing a rate analysis, reassessing what fair market was, did a lot of land assessments across the state. So 16, there were no rate increases. In 2017, no, we implemented the next five-year cycle. And so 2017 was actually a 20-year increase, or 20% increase, rather, with 10% again at most airports scheduled for the next 5 years. I say most. There were a few out there where, as we did our assessment, we were able to determine that they were either at fair market already or slightly low. So there were some rates that stayed the same or dropped a little bit as well. Continuing with the internationals for right now, really to draw your attention to the purple line, which is the top line there. CMGTW, which is Certified Maximum Gross Takeoff Weight, that's how we generate our revenue primarily. That's basically landing fees for all the aircraft that are landing there at the airport. As you can see, we've had some pretty good years here, which is encouraging. I'll get to the next slide in a minute that shows we've had quite a drop over the last many years, as you all are aware of. But especially on the international air cargo market, which is the primary driver for this, since we are such a huge hub for international air cargo, the outlook is positive. For the international system on the funding side of the house, they generally bring in about $40 to $45 million or so per year in federal funds, airport improvement program, AIP dollars from the FAA. You see how it broke out in 17 and what we're expecting for fiscal year 18 as well, but are pretty standard numbers. I'll get a little bit more detail a little later on the difference between entitlements and discretionary, but entitlements especially primarily break out based on the number of passengers coming through the airport and or the amount of cargo that each airport has.
At some point, I'd like you to address the Anchorage Airport as far as capacity, how much excess capacity that the airport has or does not have, and then Fairbanks also, and as far as the ability to accept more flights without major renovation, and then I'd also like you to talk about at some point your vision of the Anchorage Airport and what improvements or expansions may be necessary to facilitate coming gas line construction if it comes about. And you can fit that in anywhere in your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, right now is probably the best time for that. From a capacity standpoint, really the peak as far as number of operations that both Anchorage and Fairbanks were experiencing at the time was right around the 2006-2007 time frame. There, a couple things happened at that point. One, had the world recession there that affected the economy significantly. In addition, the Russians opened up their airspace, which now allowed aircraft, especially with the more efficient, longer-range ones, to make it all the way between Asia and North America or vice versa without stopping in Anchorage anymore for fuel. So that resulted in a huge drop in the number of landings occurring at both Anchorage and Fairbanks. We are still well below those numbers of operations by about 25% or so. As you saw, though, the actual cargo passing through is now is remaining pretty consistent as airlines have upgraded their fleet to the wide-body aircraft and the longer-range type aircraft. They're able to carry more passengers and more cargo with less number of flights. So what that means from an operations standpoint is Anchorage and Fairbanks both have significant excess capacity in terms of aircraft operations available. During the peak times, that 06, 07 timeframe, there was quite a bit of discussion of the need for a fourth runway in Anchorage there, especially because we were starting to be maxed out. Now the way things have changed with the fleet changes there, it would be many years before Anchorage would need a fourth runway. And frankly, we kind of see Fairbanks as being our fourth runway in a lot of cases, depending on weather and natural disaster type incidents that might cause aircraft to divert. So I don't see a need for, from a capacity standpoint, of any major infrastructure changes in the near future. Kind of rolls into capital improvement requirements, potentially in terms of gas pipeline or some sort of significant economic upturn for the state. There's lots of land, particularly around Anchorage Airport, available for development. So whatever form that might take, plenty of excess. We work closely with the municipality of Anchorage and Anchorage Economic Development Corporation as well to market some of that and make sure folks are aware of infrastructure and facilities that are available. Again, we're about reaching maxed as far as all that being leased out at this point, too. But again, there is a lot of land available for development if needed.
And how fast, I'm not as familiar with Anchorage as other airports because it's so far away in the distant land of the north. But how quick, just teasing the co-chairman here, how quick can it, the Anchorage airport respond if we had, for instance, a fairly fast time frame for a gas line construction and other related, I guess, interests from that part of the Pacific with tourism and so on and so forth? Because, and the reason I'm asking that question, to put it broader than just the gas line infrastructure, Alberta had their tourism industry maxed out when they had interest from China coming into the oil sands.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I would say we can, a lot of it depends on what type of funding is utilized for that. If it ended up being state or federal dollars, particularly federal dollars, now some of the permitting requirements and whatnot and the grant assurances associated with using those dollars get pretty specific as far as environmental studies and whatnot before that kind of development occurs. If we're able to limit it to state dollars or private dollars on that, that can certainly streamline those operations. In addition, with the South Air Park, which is kind of the old Coolis Air National Guard base piece, and some other areas, we do have ramp available that could fill some of those gaps in the meantime while development is occurring.
So we're not in a position where we'd be turning away commerce in the state. We've got the ability with between Anchorage and Fairbanks to basically take whatever they can send us.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. Currently, both locations have plenty of ramp space and facilities available to serve
okay, good.
Any uptick we'd see in the near future anyway.
Okay. Senator McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bender, could you just restate, I got the 206, 207, and the Russians opened up the airspace, and I've got that they're overflying Alaska now since then so that we have additional space. But was that between Asia and the continental United States, or what market did you say was moving?
Sure. Senator McKinnon, through the chair. Yes, I do want to clarify that those were passenger flights because obviously people weigh a lot less than the packages there. So it's those newest upgauged aircraft, passenger aircraft, that are able to make the Trans-Pacific flight, primarily between Asia and or China and North America and vice versa. Cargo flights, in order to maximize their cargo and maximize their revenue, it still works out better for them economically to fill the plane and land at Anchorage to refuel. Go in both directions.
Go ahead and continue.
Mm-hmm. Moving in, statewide aviation is really just the term we use for our rural system, which is all the airports minus Anchorage and Fairbanks. So here's a breakdown of what those airports look like. Certainly critical to rural Alaska, with 82% of our communities that are not connected by the road system there. And I do want to clarify, funding-wise, the rural system is primarily funded with general fund dollars. Total operating cost for our rural system is about $42 million there, and where you get that is from the $37 million with the general fund, in addition to the $5.3 million of leasing receipts that we get from tenants at our rural airports. That's where you get that $42. Recognize that the state does bring in approximately $4.5 million right now with aviation fuel tax, but that flows right directly into the general fund. So we do see that money back roundabout by way of the general fund. That's through the highways and aviation component within DOT. Here's kind of what the budget looks like overall. You see the $42 million operating cost I referenced, as well as the revenue. Another piece, when we start talking about system sustainability and working to find efficiencies and cost reductions, you see the plus $7 million of federal funds up there in the right dollar. We've made a concerted effort and been able to partner with the FAA in a lot of areas and in transition a lot of our maintenance activities, things to like crack sealing, painting, some of those items that we do on a regular basis, are able to utilize federal dollars for that in order to minimize the impact on the general fund. Sand and chemical optimization, you know, things like pre-wetting the sand before we stick it on the runway helps keep the sand on the runway for one thing, as well as provide some chemical reaction there to minimize icing. Talked about the conversion. Another piece, after-hour service agreements. One of the biggest components that's taken a hit within DOT with the reduction in budgets over the last few years is our ability to conduct overtime, especially at our airports. But that's an area where, after significant work with the carriers, there was a big desire to have the ability to be able to fly into these airports after hours if needed. And so what an after-hours agreement is it's a particular agreement with that carrier making that request and has costs associated with it for specific call-out times depending on what type of services they need, whether they need crash and rescue available for large passenger flights or whether they need some runway service, snow plowing, chemicals, those sorts of things. So then we're able to recoup those after-hours costs for the department. Revenue generation options continue to be discussion with the aviation groups out there. Certainly from the carrier's standpoint or the pilot standpoint, the aviation fuel tax would be the simplest and what they feel is to be the most equitable way to generate revenue for our rural system. User/registration fee. We do have a registration proposal currently in works right now based on some FAA requirements there as well, but that's another option available that provides a means for generating some revenue depending on how that system's designed, but also provides some benefits to the carriers for that or the aircraft operators, whether it's in tunes of being able to park free in transient parking or some of those types of options.
Senator Bishop.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that one has generated some initial discussion with pilots early on, and I think there's been some more subsequent follow-up conversations with your shop, and people are kind of maybe back at the drawing board with the user group and kind of taking a wait-and-see attitude. There's more discussion to follow, right?
That is correct, Senator Bishop, through the chair. Yes, we've had having some good work with the Aviation Advisory Board, which represents most of the stakeholder groups around the state. We have developed a new framework or a modified framework that I think will be more appealing to the various groups as well. Again, it is there is a couple FAA requirements in there that we're needing to gather information, but yes, wanting to make sure that it's something that's fair and equitable. And understandable to the folks impacted by that.
And thanks for that, Mr. Chairman. Follow-up. Thanks for that clarification on there's some maybe some underlying federal requirements that people weren't maybe made aware of initially going in. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yep, and then the last one is landing fees. Again, that's least desirable generally by the aviation community, but that is one of the primary revenue generation mechanisms. Certainly that's where Anchorage and Fairbanks make the majority of their money, as do Juneau, Ketchikan, and the other municipally operated airports, as well as airports nationwide. On the rural side of the house, generally about $130 to $135 million or so that system brings in through AIP dollars each year. Get an awful lot of bang for the buck on that. For most of our airports, the match required by the state is 6.25% of the project costs, so roughly a 20-to-1 benefit there for the state dollars. We also have a lot of airports out there that are taking part in the Essential Air Service program through USDOT, and if a community is being served with a contract so too with them, then that drops the match down to 5% as well. So you see that roughly about $11 million per year is what the capital match ends up being on our rural side of a house.
So on the capital funding side with the match, I think in Southeast here we're looking at an airport that's already been in the capital budget at Angoon. I think that's going through the process, is that not correct? And one other airports around are being built or refurbished with these funds.
Right, Mr. Chairman. You are correct. And actually, a couple slides later, I've got a list of what our current projects are right now.
I'll wait then.
Okay. Often get questions on how are the AIP dollars determined. And so this slide, I realize it's a little bit busy there, but it does kind of break down how that works. AIP is funded through the Airport and Airway Trust Fund, which is a portion of every ticket any passenger pays, as well as excise fees on some fuel taxes around the country, as well as cargo fees as well. What that ends up with is a percentage of that total trust fund then each year is allocated to the Airport Improvement Program. They start off by dishing out entitlements, and that's based on how much cargo, a percentage of the cargo for the nation, the percentage of the passengers for the nation. And you see how Anchorage and Fairbanks are primarily, they're the ones that receive primarily the cargo and the passenger entitlements. Then when you start getting down to primary and non-primary, that's just starting to get lower and lower levels of airports, busier or less, and see how each of those break out. When you get to the state apportionment, that's based on a land mass and a population-based number. We obviously do pretty well on our land size. And then they were also able to, years ago when this was first stood up, specifically call out Alaska for its own supplement as well. So that's what that number relates to. After all that money is dished out nationwide, you've got a portion of that left, and that's what's the discretionary. And so that actually is what relates to our aircraft registration piece. The way the FAA prioritizes capital projects nationwide depends on a lot of factors, and one of those big factors is how many aircraft are based at those particular airports and what type of activity is generated. And that's how the FAA dishes out that discretionary fund portion then each year.
Mr. Chairman, on that point,
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, sir. On that point, your last comment, FAA knows that the aircraft is registered, but they don't know what specific airport is registered. Is that correct?
That is correct, Senator Bishop.
Hence the reason for wanting to register the aircraft to be able to divvy up the discretionary.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that is correct. That is the big underlining item there is understanding where aircraft are based.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, this gets to your question earlier on what are some of the major projects taking place right now. And these are the primary big categories as well we use out there. Pavement rehabilitation comes from anything to redoing the subsurface to simple mill and paves for the full runway and taxiways as well. Access tends to be improvements to the facility rather than just fixing up what's there. And then buildings fall into the category as well, and those are primarily snow removal equipment buildings, shrubs, where the equipment is stored.
So does this list go on, or do we, like on rural access, when we take, this is a center call, and we take care of these projects in these communities, do we go on to another set of lists, or do we just repeat this stuff like we do the pave and mill on a lot of our roads, or
can you, Mr. Chairman, yes, this is just a sampling. These are the current highest priorities, and the next portion I'll get into is how we actually prioritize projects statewide. We have many, many more projected out for our spending plan for over the next 5 years. We already have the AIP dollars allocated on those out years. These just happen to be the highest priority right now based on current airport conditions. Which gets down to how we actually determine priorities out there. We go through the Airport Project Evaluation Board process, the APEB. The actual board members include myself, each of the regional directors for DOT, our operations manager within the Division of Statewide Aviation, and our director of program development as well. So that's the ultimate board. But really how a project comes to fruition is our regional planners are always engaged with the communities within their region, making a good assessment of what the infrastructure requirements are, what the needs are, what the community's desires are, collecting all that data. And as they start to see the need for new facilities or infrastructure and or start to see a decay or a degradation of our current facilities, now that starts bringing forth the need for some sort of project in the future. They will collect the information for that, put together some of the initial design requirements, some of the estimate costs and whatnot, and bring that proposed project then before the APEB, the board itself, for scoring. And the next slide will have the scoring criteria there as well for your review. But essentially, if it's an airport project, which is everything except the buildings, there's about 16 different criteria, and then for buildings we have 8. Each of the board members score that project. Those scores are all combined, and ultimately we get a total score, and that helps us determine then out of all the projects out there in the department, which are the most critical at that time, and we build the spending plan based on that. The only caveat is that unless an emergency is happening, some sort of critical erosion or natural disaster type piece, we don't displace anything within the current year or the next year, just because those are so close to going to funding already, that we try to keep that pretty stable. Those projects are constantly reviewed because some of the times these projects come to fruition many years before they actually see the light of day. Certainly things can happen that increase their score or increase their urgency, and we're constantly assessing that and incorporating that into the spending plan. And we do keep a 5-year rolling plan there that is coordinated significantly with the FAA. Our criteria actually required to match pretty closely with the FAA. They need to approve our criteria as well, and that's what helps on the national priority ranking then as well for how they distribute the discretionary funds each year. Here's the scoring criteria we use. Primarily, safety, of course, is weighted pretty heavily. Each of these factors do have various weightings, but generally scoring between 0 and 5. And it can vary from anything, whether the community wants a project, doesn't want a project, are they able to contribute additional funds, are there tribal funds involved, try to bring in all the pieces we can there that makes a project as desirable or not as possible.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just noticing on the airport improvement, while safety is first, and I totally agree with that, it's at least interesting to note that cost effectiveness is the bottom of 16 criteria. And I brought this up, I believe it was last year, Mr. Chairman, to you, that you know, we do have some of these airports that are in close proximity to each other, but we are not building a road because when we do the calculation on the snow clearing of the airport itself, and then we compare that to building a road and then the cost for that snow removal, that combining the airports never, from a DOT perspective, are cost effective to do. And I just point that out, that it's a flaw, I believe, in how we're looking at that, because we could provide better air service by having one airport in close proximity than two. So I know it's important to each community to have their own airport, but it may not be something that we can afford in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. I will mention on this slide, these are not in priority rank. These are just merely the list of criteria. So cost effectiveness is not the last one we consider. I throw this last one up here just for your awareness. Certainly there are challenges constantly facing this. Fleet changes up top. I mentioned the wide bodies. That has certainly changed the dynamics and some of the rates and fees and the activity we're seeing, particularly at our international airports out there. On the rural side, Penn Air has recently brought the Saab 2000 online, which has enough passengers that requires the airport to be certificated per FAA requirements, which is a more expensive way to operate an aircraft. They're currently just operating at locations that are already certificated, but they are always looking for new markets out there. Alaska Airlines has recently brought their 737 freighter on as well, which is continuing working with them because it's changed their schedule somewhat, which has impacted our operations there with our ground crews as well. Q400s are leaving, effective in March. Climate change. Certainly, see that happening. You know, this has been a rough year, again, up in the Fairbanks area. We're seeing, again, right around those freeze-thaw cycle events there, a lot of freezing rain, a lot of heavy icing, where we used to be able to count on just nice, cold, dry, white snow that was easy to sweep away. And then along with a lot of coastal erosion and a lot of subsurface issues, especially in the northern half of the state, where we're having a harder and harder time keeping the permafrost frozen there, which is causing quite a bit of heaving on our runways. Federal compliance pieces, you know, we've got great partners here in Alaska. They really understand Alaska. Most of them are lifelong Alaskans. But delivering that message over to D.C. sometimes is a challenge. So we take every advantage we can when we have folks out from the East Coast to get them around, out to our rural airports especially, making sure they're aware of the unique challenges Alaska faces there and keep fighting that battle. And then ones we're always keeping our eye on here, bypass mail program, the Essential Air Service program as well, critical to Alaska. A lot of folks benefit from it. It's, it really is essential to us, and every few years it seems like that comes up in Congress. There's being high visibility items there. So we keep ourselves armed, keep a good conversation with the carriers who are utilizing those programs to make sure we can advocate correctly for Alaska when those subjects come up.
And if we can back up for a little bit on the list of airports, can you give us a kind of a rundown on the Hangoon Airport if you happen to have it off the top of your head, or you can always get back to us also if you have these questions. But that.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So Hangoon, it would be a new airport because the current landing strip is the water out there. That has been initially funded, so they're in the process of the design and engineering of that location. I'll have to get back to you on the details. I believe 2020 is the planned initial construction date of that, but I will verify that and get back.
Yeah, if you can get back to me on the Hangoon, and I've also heard that there was, you know, the bottomless pit of muskeg and some sounding issues, and just kind of curious on, you know, how that's going, the site selection, the site that was selected, and, you know, the expectations of that site versus what they found so far. And then the other airport, Klawak, on the Prince of Wales, gets a lot of activity. And I know in our office we worked with fire department up north to get a surplus fire truck shipped down to Klawak, which is there, so we could have, you know, some fire suppressant ability there at that airport. And just... maybe when you look into Hangoon, maybe just kind of brush up on Klawak and give the office a rundown on status of the Klawak Airport and activity there. It just seems to be getting busier and busier over time. And I'll also like to note, just for the other committee members, it's worked very well to look around the larger metropolitan areas for surplus equipment rather than just junk it out or whatever, to have them either sell it or donate it, whatever works, to the rural, smaller areas. It works very well, and it's very appreciative of the smaller communities. And on occasion, we might get a truck that doesn't hardly fit on the streets. But that's a better problem to have than no fire truck at all. So, any other things you want to touch on as far as airports?
Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to entertain any additional questions.
Senator Bishop, you have any?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for your presentation. I just have, you can get back to my office on this. How many, and I forgot to ask you this the other day when we were talking about the AWAS systems in rural Alaska, but how many how many flights do we have landing annually in Northway that require customs inspection? And if you get back with me on that, because that's still the port of entry, or are they coming all the way to Fairbanks?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, you know, I don't believe we have customs at Northway anymore, but I will follow up on that and confirm. I don't know the number of aircraft landing. If we don't have customs there, then I would think our number would be zero right now. They're landing there that need them.
Well,
but
I was in the village. Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Follow up.
Yeah.
So I had a you know meeting with the in the village last year and now I don't know, but I was having this conversation with the tribe, but you know small aircraft were landing there that were coming up the highway and they were having to wait there for a couple hours while the border agent came from 1202 up there to clear them to go on the rest of the way to Fairbanks or Anchorage or wherever they're going. Mm-hmm. So if you could research that a little bit for me, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, maybe check on that and get back to the committee, and same with the Angoon and the Klawak.
Be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Back and we'll pass it around. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, General has received a decrease in state matching grants. We have the largest municipal airport in the state. And I just wanted your reaction to why the decrease in funding.
Sure.
Not only the FAA, but you. I mean, both.
Correct. Senator Egan, through the chair, the department had adopted a policy many years ago to help communities who run their own airports to meet the match.
Mm-hmm.
Using state match dollars in order to accomplish that. As the state budget continued to shrink, a decision was made to utilize all of those match funds for the state capital requirements versus partnering with the local communities for theirs. Because with the reason being that those airports have the ability to generate that revenue through their rates and fees programs that don't exist at our rural airports.
Okay. I'm not enamored with the answer, but okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Final question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One to do with what's in front of us and one just a request to the department. The first one is based on the high priority listings on slide 14, are we looking at geographic proximity when we're looking at waiting projects to move them forward in a particular year? And why I'm asking that question is I see, as an example, Tuxuk Bay. We're looking at buildings in Tuxuk Bay at the same time, which I appreciate because if we're going to mobilize and demobilize heavy equipment, it's nice to bring it in and be able to bring the region or that particular community's buildings up to par. And so I'm just wondering whether we're looking at any regionalization so that when we bring in that heavy equipment, if it's needed for some of these repairs, that we're getting all of the airports or other work done at the same times. So are we collaborating in that way?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, absolutely. In fact, that's one of the things we look at as far as scoring a project originally at the APEB is whether or not we can align that with another project in close proximity to get the biggest bang for the buck on those money. The buildings referenced here are all the snow approval removal equipment buildings there because it is an FAA requirement that all that equipment be stored indoors. So that's generally what those relate to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then on behalf of the constituents that I represent in the Chugiak Eagle River and on the military bases, the Glen Highway is a main artery that many commuters are on every day, and sometimes there's accidents on those roads. I met recently with some of our emergency responders, and they've indicated that the emergency turnaround lanes are not being cleared at the same time the highways are. And it's creating a slower response time in some cases because they can't use the turnaround lane. And so I'm wondering, I believe my staff has forwarded the request to you. So this is not meant for an answer today, but more to make sure that my constituents know that we are reaching out to you to address that issue. So if we could get that response back sooner than later so that we can get that information to our local community, that would be helpful. So there's turnaround spots on these big highways, and emergency responders can pull in to circle around. It sometimes cuts minutes off of response time if they can do that. So just
be happy to.
Wanting to work with the department. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for the department before we let aviation off the hook? Well, thank you for your presentation today. That's all on the agenda. Thursday, the 8th of February, we will continue with the statewide transportation improvement plan process, and we will continue this area we'll be looking at roughly between 2018 and 2021 and look at the different regions. So we'll see you Thursday. We are adjourned.